Blog Talk Radio.
Aaron McCready.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler.
I ask for your help and your patience as together we steady the ship of state.
That's K.I. The earlier this evening, she was Alabama's lieutenant governor, but after Republican Robert Bentley resigned, she became the second woman in that state's history to be sworn in as governor. 74-year-old Bentley pleading guilty to two misdemeanor campaign finance charges today. He also faced allegations he had an extramarital affair with an aide and used his office to cover it up.
I can no longer allow my family, my dear friends, my dedicated staff and cabinet to be subjected to the consequences that my past actions have brought upon them.
Bentley was also likely to be impeached. A domestic dispute spilling over into an elementary school classroom today in San Bernardino, California. An 8-year-old boy among the victims.
He was taken to Loma Linda University Medical Center via helicopter, airlifted out almost immediately as soon as we can get resources there. Tragically, he has passed away.
San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Burguan. The suspect identified as 53-year-old Cedric Anderson. He fatally shot his wife, a teacher, wounding another of her students, a 9-year-old boy now in stable condition, before turning the gun on himself. A plea deal in South Carolina. Charleston church shooter Dylan Roof given 9 life sentences on state murder charges. He now heads to federal prison to await execution. At a ceremony in the White House Rose Garden.
I, Neil M. Gorsuch.
Judge Gorsuch, now Justice Gorsuch, replacing the late Antonin Scalia on the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Anthony Kennedy did the honors. Gorsuch was once his law clerk. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced, 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 balanced. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with U.S. allies in Italy today. Tomorrow, he's in Moscow, where he'll be walking a diplomatic tightrope during talks with the Russians about the chemical attack in Syria, Russia's possible role in that, and the U.S. missile strike that followed, targeting a Syrian base.
This is a base that was well known before 2013 for storing chemical weapons, and we now know continued to have chemical agents that can be combined together to create this sarin gas, and that was used in the strike last Tuesday. And so it really baffles the mind that Russians could be at that base, be knowledgeable of when Syrian planes take off, and not know that chemical weapons were being assembled there, especially since we've now learned that Russian experts with chemical weapons expertise have been based in Syria in recent months.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin at the Pentagon. Action being taken by airport officials following the rough treatment of a bumped passenger on a United Airlines flight out of Chicago.
A man who refused to give up his seat to accommodate United employees on the airline's overbooked flight Sunday was taken off by force and left bruised and bloodied to the horror of fellow passengers.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The airline has apologized, saying it had no choice but to contact Chicago Aviation Police, who have since placed one of the officers involved on leave, effective immediately, with social media blowing up over this. No word on the condition of that passenger. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
That passenger, reportedly a doctor, who said he had to get home to see patients. The Dow and S&P ending up a point today. The NASDAQ gains 3. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Crady.
You have read about him in the Huffington Post. You have seen him quoted in Esquire magazine. The Washington Post writes about him, and you saw him on MSNBC. This is Aaron McCready. Give Aaron a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. Also follow him on Twitter at Aaron McCready or visit him on the web at AaronMcCready.com.
Good evening, everyone. I am Aaron McCready. It's great to have you with us today. We have got a whole lot to talk about. A whole lot to talk about, actually. We've got Syria in the news. Of course, you know that we went and took military action, a strike against one of their air bases. So we've got that to talk about a little bit later on in the show with a good friend of the show. You know him, Jack Caravelli. He'll be back on in just a little bit. And then we've got, news out of Alabama. The governor resigned today. And also, there was a shooting in San Bernardino, California at an elementary school. Looks like three are dead, including the shooter. It was the shooter, his wife, it appears, that was a teacher there. And then also an 8-year-old child that was behind the teacher. Two others were shot also, but they're in stable condition. So thoughts and prayers, by all means, and I'm sure the same goes for you and your family. Thoughts and prayers out to the victims and the families and the classmates and staff of that school in San Bernardino. And we'll cover that in just a little bit also. But I also wanted to say happy Sibling Day to everyone out there. Happy Sibling Day to my brother and sister, Amber and Adam. Adam, of course, you know, is a producer on the show, so thanks to him for being on. And then also to my sister, who actually is an elementary school teacher herself. So happy Sibling Day to Amber and Adam. Thanks for being my brother and sister. So like I said, a little bit later on in the show, we've got Jack Caravelli on. He's a former CIA and official in the Clinton and Bush White House. Now, here's one good thing about him, and that you may or may not know. In the Clinton White House, he was part of the national security team. He was also director of nuclear nonproliferation for the Middle East and Russia. He was so high up in the Clinton White House that he was responsible for 4,000 nuclear warheads in 95-ish locations in the Soviet Union / Russia. So he is a big deal, and we're lucky enough that he's a friend of the show, and he will have his insights in just a little bit on Syria. But like I said, got three dead, including an 8-year-old and an apparent murder-suicide at San Bernardino Elementary School. Horrible situation. The gunman was identified as, and I'm not even going to say his name, he doesn't deserve that, but he's a 53-year-old Riverside resident. And North Park Elementary is actually the elementary school in San Bernardino. He went with a 357 revolver, opened fire on his wife, 53-year-old Karen Smith, and it was in a special needs classroom. So if that tells you about this lowlife that went in, it looks like a domestic disturbance, but you know what? It went and rolled over into the elementary school, unfortunately. Looks like emergency dispatchers began receiving 911 calls around 10:27 a.m. And he had came to the school as a visitor who signed into the front office. And then he went to drop off something to his wife, which the school officials, according to the news reports, said was not uncommon. Of course, you know, he's in. By all means, he's the husband of the teacher. Went in and opened fire. And, just a sad situation. Give us a call, 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. If you want to be on the show, of course, you can go to AaronMcCready.com, listen live to the show there. Listen to some of the, not all, but some of the previous episodes there. Get tidbits of news and information there. And also, you can get my daily insights on Twitter. Follow me at Aaron McCready, AaronMcCready. You know what's something that just irks me? And this is just, you know, a friend talking to friends out there. But, you know, obviously I'm a guy. And you know, when I'm out and about and I say my name, they say, is it A-A-R-O-N or E-R-I-N? That drives me up the wall. Now, you know, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, is the guy's version. E-R-I-N is the female version. I mean, it just drives me up the wall. So, you know, I got it off my chest now. I can breathe easy. But for those of you who don't know, A-A-R-O-N is the guy's version. E-R-I-N is the female version. So, A-A-R-O-N. McCready, M-C-C-R-E-A-D-Y. M-C-C Ready is how you spell it. So, M-C-C-R-E-A-D-Y, AaronMcCready.com. And at Aaron McCready on Twitter. So, as you heard earlier, too, the Alabama governor resigned due to a scandal. Looks like he pleaded guilty. Also, prosecutors want him to step down also. He pleaded guilty to some, looks like, corruption charges that Ethics Commission last week found that he violated ethics and campaign finance laws. So a lot of ruckus going on down there. Also, looks like he was having an affair and actually led to a divorce with his wife. And I think they're married, actually. I don't know. I read this somewhere. Maybe I'm just out of line here. Close to 50 years, I believe. That's what I'm looking up. Yeah, his marriage of 50 years also ended because of the scandal. And so he resigned today. And now the lieutenant governor, which is a female, which nothing wrong with that, but only the second female, and that's why it's so important, second female in history to become governor of Alabama. So not to be a backhanded compliment, but congratulations to her for becoming governor of Alabama, of course, formerly the lieutenant governor. And, you know, back real quick to that shooting in San Bernardino, California, where the 8-year-old child, her teacher, and then the shooter, which happened to be the teacher's husband, are all dead. And then I believe 2 are in the hospital in stable condition. But, you know, one thing that crossed my mind, and I know it's this way with police officers, people in law enforcement, that you cannot have any domestic disturbance calls or history of that to be a law enforcement officer. Why don't we invoke that or make that the same for elementary school teachers because of this? If we can't protect our children going into a vulnerable place where in most schools, guns are not allowed. Teachers cannot carry guns. They have a resource officer there, but there's only one resource officer. What's the chances that resource officer is going to be at the right place at the right time? And then some just have hourly people patrolling the school grounds, don't have a gun. It's like that commercial that you see on TV that is a monitor, a security monitor. And there's this guy in the bank, and he's standing there, and the bank's being robbed. And people say, why don't you do something? And he said, I'm a security monitor. And he said, the bank's being robbed. So it's the same type thing. Why have people unarmed patrolling the school if they can't really do anything about it, if they can't take a shooter out or a disturbance out? It's like what we've dealt with in the military and our respect around the world. The United States lost a lot of respect around the world because of our lack to respond. And I'm not talking about the United States being the world's policeman. I'm not talking about that at all. But when you have a country like Syria that has a history, and this isn't the first time that they've gassed their own people. They did, I believe, and you know, this is just me talking off the top of my head, 2013-ish, 2014, 2013, an estimated 1,500 people died as a result of these gases. If you're not going to use your weapons, and people know you're not going to use your weapons, what really deters them from going and doing things like this? Same thing in the elementary schools. If someone knows and someone wants to go out there and, God forbid, do something in a high school, middle school, elementary school, preschool, even college, and they know that people aren't armed there, do you think they're really going to fear of a little security guard? Not to diminish their responsibility, but do you really think that they're really going to care if there's someone there that's going to alert police? What can that person do against a gun or a knife or a sword or what have you? Absolutely nothing. You know, it's the old saying, bringing a knife to a gunfight. So if we're going to act in those type of ways, why not have, makes perfect sense to me, rules on the books, laws on the books saying, if you have domestic disturbance background in your household, sorry, you can't be a teacher. Sorry. Too vulnerable. Maybe if we would have had something like that, like law enforcement has, maybe, just maybe, this wouldn't have happened. And I don't know, maybe there were no previous, previous disturbances. But it looks like they've also, they were just married for only a few months, and they've been separated for about a month. Also, the gunman had a criminal history, including weapons charges. And look at this. I'm reading it right now. I stand corrected. Accusations of domestic violence. So if we held our educational professionals to the same standard we hold law enforcement with their background, looks like this wouldn't have happened. Drug charges also. It's just sad. It's just sad. I don't know. It's, you know, this happens too many times. And, you know, I think the more that we take away people's right to bear arms, it's going to continue to happen. 646-200-3400. 646-200-3400 if you want to go live on the show. And if you disagree with me, call. We'll get you on right away. Adam will put you on right on with me. I like people that disagree with me. If you think I'm wrong, let me know I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe you can enlighten me. Maybe I can enlighten you. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what makes America great. It'd be nice if the folks in Washington, D.C. thought that. You know, Republicans, Democrats going at each other. America is the land of opportunity, the land where all different people from all different countries can come together. Different ideas. The great melting pot. Why can't that be Washington, D.C., the great melting pot? All ideas come together. Yeah, you're going to have some heated debates, but, you know, at the end of the day, everyone knows that we want what's best for the country. And that's usually how you get good rules, good laws on the books. This person, that person, you meet in the middle. It's kind of like in the workplace, if you're trying to determine if, you know, if you have an issue in the workplace, one person says this, one person says that, the truth's probably somewhere in the middle. Truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Both sides aren't going to get their way 100%. Got to give. It's a give and take. You know, I think the more we go back to our roots, the better off the country will be. The great melting pot. It doesn't mean that you can come here illegally. If you came to this country illegally, you're a criminal. Period. There's ways you come into this country, come here across the border in the dark of night, sneak across the border, you're a criminal. It's against the law. It's against the law. That's the definition of a criminal. But on a happier news, and if you want to talk about any of those other items, you can just give me a call. But Tesla is in the news, and this just blows my mind on Tesla. Tesla has made it as the number one automaker in the United States, Tesla. They surpassed General Motors. GM went bankrupt. We know that. And the GM stock is only 4 months younger than Tesla, as far as the actual stock goes. And now Tesla has surpassed General Motors as the number one car company. Now, and it's really surprising because how many Chevrolets do you see on the street? How many GM cars do you see on the street? Heck, how many Fords do you see on the street? Jeeps, Chrysler, Dodges, you name it, Toyotas, Honda, Hyundai. How many of those see on the street? Then how many Teslas you see on the street? Here in Houston and before Houston, Atlanta, you saw a few. When you fly over country in the United States, as they call, you probably don't see that many Teslas. But I got some facts about Tesla that might be a little bit mind-blowing for you. Now, the CEO, Elon Musk, only spends about half of his time with Tesla. The other, I believe, is with SpaceX, developing commercial spaceflight. But you didn't know that. Only 6 parts on a Tesla Model S need regular replacement. Did you know that? Only 4 parts. I mean, 6 parts, I'm sorry. It's the 4 tires and the 2 wiper blades. And get this, Chevy has a network of 3,000 dealerships, right? They're part of General Motors. Tesla only has 52 showrooms. So they're the number one automaker now in the United States. Now they're coming out. Let me look through my paperwork here. So I apologize if you hear me rifling through my paperwork. They're coming out with the Model 3, a less expensive model of Tesla. It's going to be priced at $35,000. By 2018, they're going to reach 500,000 vehicles in production. And they've already got orders for 400,000 of the Model 3. Now, Tesla, you know, it doesn't use gasoline. It's all pretty much by batteries, really. And another fact with the Tesla, you can outperform a Ferrari, a Porsche, Lamborghini right away off the line. If a Lamborghini comes up to you and you're going to race at a short distance at a stoplight to the next stoplight, a Tesla is going to beat it. You know why? Because it doesn't have gears. It's not like it doesn't have an engine. It doesn't have gears. So that right there causes it to boost off the line much, much quicker. But then again, it doesn't have the range. So, you know, if you're going to take it across the country, you'd make sure you have the battery charging stations. And actually, here in Houston, there's battery charging stations for Teslas, even at Cracker Barrel. Can you believe that, Cracker Barrel? But, and the Model S also received Motor Trend's Car of the Year award. So, you know, if you're looking for a good car, drive around town, don't have to worry about gas, but you do have to put a battery charging station in your garage. Maybe look at a Tesla. Kind of crazy, isn't it? 646-200-3400. Tesla Motors is the second oldest car manufacturer in the United States. Congratulations to them. They just became number one. So if you're looking for a Tesla, look for the 52 dealerships. I guess you have to buy one online. But they are pretty cool. They're slick looking. They're fast looking. And they're super quiet. They have no engine. Super quiet. Later on in the program, we'll be talking to Dr. Jack Caravelli about Syria, Russia, the Middle East. And, you know, looking on Facebook, and you can actually find me on Facebook there. I don't have a like page. It's actually my Facebook. I'll respond to you if you want to, you know, become my friend on Facebook. You can actually send me messages on there, and I'll respond to you and everything. But I go on Facebook, and I see all these people. Oh, we're going to war with Syria. Oh, my gosh, it's going to be another war. Oh, why are we doing this? What's wrong with Donald Trump? Oh, my goodness, what's he thinking? Well, let me ask you a question. And even the diehard liberals in the media aren't complaining about Trump's missile strike on that airbase in Syria. But let me ask you a question. Let's say the United States, we really came to the end of our rope, and something happened and we were just, I don't know, under a dictatorship or just a crazy madman or mad woman. And they decided, because they're commander-in-chief of the military, that they didn't like Texas. They didn't like Georgia. They didn't like Virginia. They didn't like Tennessee. They didn't like California, Nebraska, Ohio, wherever. Pick the state. Florida. Mm-hmm. Too many people are going to Disney World, and they decided to do gas attack at Disney World or gas attack in your hometown or Houston or Atlanta, L.A., New York. Pick your city. There's nothing you could do about it. You would hope and pray that there would be a country somewhere on planet Earth that would come and help you because you were helpless from your government, that they were killing you. And the same people that say the right is unsympathetic to people of color, unsympathetic to gays, oh, unsympathetic for this or for that, they're the same people that don't want people to come in to us, actually us going to another country to keep them from gassing themselves. Where's the sympathy? 646-200-3400. We're going to go to another break. We'll be back right after this with Jack Caravelli. Thanks for listening.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler.
I ask for your help and your patience as together we steady the ship of state.
That's K.I. The earlier this evening, she was Alabama's lieutenant governor, but after Republican Robert Bentley resigned, she became the second woman in that state's history to be sworn in as governor. 74-year-old Bentley pleading guilty to two misdemeanor campaign finance charges today. He also faced allegations he had an extramarital affair with an aide and used his office to cover it up.
I can no longer allow my family, my dear friends, my dedicated staff and cabinet to be subjected to the consequences that my past actions have brought upon them.
Bentley was also likely to be impeached. A domestic dispute spilling over into an elementary school classroom today in San Bernardino, California. An 8-year-old boy among the victims.
He was taken to Loma Linda University Medical Center via helicopter, airlifted out almost immediately as soon as we can get resources there. Tragically, he has passed away.
San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Burguan. The suspect identified as 53-year-old Cedric Anderson. He fatally shot his wife, a teacher, wounding another of her students, a 9-year-old boy now in stable condition, before turning the gun on himself. A plea deal in South Carolina. Charleston church shooter Dylan Roof given 9 life sentences on state murder charges. He now heads to federal prison to await execution. At a ceremony in the White House Rose Garden.
I, Neil M. Gorsuch.
Judge Gorsuch, now Justice Gorsuch, replacing the late Antonin Scalia on the U.S. Supreme Court. Justice Anthony Kennedy did the honors. Gorsuch was once his law clerk. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with U.S. allies in Italy today. Tomorrow, he's in Moscow, where he'll be walking a diplomatic tightrope during talks with the Russians about the chemical attack in Syria, Russia's possible role in that, and the U.S. missile strike that followed targeting a Syrian base.
This is a base that was well known before 2013 for storing chemical weapons, and we now know continued to have chemical agents that can be combined together to create this sarin gas, and that was used in the strike last Tuesday. And so it really baffles the mind that Russians could be at that base, be knowledgeable of when Syrian planes take off, and not know that chemical weapons were being assembled there, especially since we've now learned that Russian experts with chemical weapons expertise have been based in Syria in recent months.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin at the Pentagon. Action being taken by airport officials following the rough treatment of a bumped passenger on a United Airlines flight out of Chicago.
A man who refused to give up his seat to accommodate United employees on the airline's overbooked flight Sunday was taken off by force and left bruised and bloodied to the horror of fellow passengers. The airline has apologized, saying it had no choice but to contact Chicago Aviation Police, who have since placed one of the officers involved on leave, effective immediately. With social media blowing up over this, no word on the condition of that passenger. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
That passenger, reportedly a doctor, who said he had to get home to see patients. The Dow and S&P ending up a point today. The NASDAQ gains three. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Crady.
You have read about him in the Huffington Post. You have seen him quoted in Esquire magazine. The Washington Post writes about him, and you saw him on MSNBC. This is Aaron McCrady. Give Aaron a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. Also follow him on Twitter at Aaron McCrady or visit him on the web at AaronMcCrady.com.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. It's great to have you along. As promised, here in just a second, we've got a good friend of the show, Jack Caravelli, on. And, the situation gets worse and worse, looks like. And he's going to talk about Syria, and we're going to see what his opinion is on what we need to do with Syria, Russia. Expert, actually, on that part of the world. So we're going to get to him in just a second. Again, my condolences if you're just joining us to the family of the little boy, the little eight-year-old boy that was killed today over in San Bernardino at the elementary school. Looks like it was a murder-suicide. The shooter went in to kill his wife, and unfortunately, there's an eight-year-old boy behind the teacher, and two others look like got shot too, but they're in stable condition. But thoughts and prayers go out to everyone involved in that situation out there. But moving forward and moving along to world and current affairs, we are going to bring on Jack Caravelli, and he really needs no introduction to those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis. But for those of you listening for the first time, like I said, he's an expert in that part of the world. He was part of the White House National Security Council, and he was actually director for nonproliferation and for Russia and the Middle East. And I am very thrilled to have him back on the show. Great friend of the show, Jack Caravelli. Welcome back to the show.
Well, Aaron, thank you, and great to be with you. And, of course, great to be with your audience again.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, we were talking off the air, and I said, you know, and I say this every episode but that you're on, but it seems like that it just keeps worse and worse and worse. And, you know, the situation here in the United States and the world, and Syria is no different. And what can you tell us with Russia's involvement? It looks like it's coming out today that Russia knew about the chemical strikes in advance. With your sources, is that what you're hearing also?
Aaron, it's a great question, first of all. The short answer is yes, I think that's probably the case. And people I've talked to here in Washington share that view. As you and I have talked before, both the Russians and the Iranians for years have been supporters of the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, and Russia in particular has been a major military supporter to the Syrians, you know, going back even before the horrific 2013 use of chemical weapons by the Syrians. So I think the likelihood, Aaron, is very high that the Russians knew in advance. They may well have had a drone flying overhead before the attack, probably to surveil, you know, the current situation on the ground around the hospital. So the Russians, I think, as the newscasters say, have had a difficult time understanding the truth, or at least being willing to express it. And I think we're going to find over the next few days even more confirmation that the Russians indeed knew about this in advance and agreed to it, sanctioned it, and that is horrific as well as the act itself.
Is this a miscalculation on Putin's part? Because to me, now, he's a despicable human being. I can't stand the man, and I've called him a thug many times here on the show, but is this a miscalculation on his part? Because he seems very, very smart, and he plays things, you know, to the betterment of him and his country. Has he really messed up here, or is there a bigger picture that he's trying to accomplish?
Well, it's a great question. We, you know, the only honest answer is we may never know for sure, but, you know, the way you've described him, I would fully agree he is a thug. He's clever. He's cunning. He may well have miscalculated. I can certainly, you know, make that case. Part of his calculation in the past was that, you know, Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama, of course, was weak. Obama said that he would take action if the Syrians in 2013 crossed this so-called red line. They did. Obama did nothing. Putin obviously observed that. And Putin may have well been, you know, again, with the Syrian sort of in the lead, trying to take the measure of just how far Trump could be pushed. So he may well have miscalculated. So now it's going to be very interesting. The Secretary of State, Tillerson, is going to be in Moscow for talks. Tillerson has said the Russians have to own up to this. I obviously don't think that they will. It's a great talking point, but it'll be really interesting. I think what's implied in your question, Aaron, is that, you know, what, you know, Putin's ego in this has been bruised and damaged, and that suggests to me that we may well see mischief, not necessarily from the Russians in Syria, although we certainly could, but, you know, in areas outside the Syrian region, such as in the Baltics, perhaps cyber attacks, perhaps Ukraine, where, you know, the Russians have, you know, more cards to play, more tactical advantages. So, you know, we may see the strike last week from Trump really is only the opening gambit as a, perhaps for some time, a, you know, an unstated tit-for-tat between the Americans and the Russians. So stay tuned. We probably haven't heard the end of this.
You know, words came out also that Russia has a warship steaming in the same vicinity as, you know, some of our vessels. Now, to me, outsider looking in, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like Putin is just doing this for show, because if I really wanted to create ruckus and chaos, I just wouldn't send a warship in there going against two American ships. I would send a whole fleet in. Is this just for show? I mean, what's going on with that?
Well, Aaron, I think at the very least, a lot of it is for show. Again, Putin's ego probably demands that he show some kind of, if you will, physical response. The Russian Navy, remember, is really considerably weaker than ours. On top of the two U.S. warships, you know, that you mentioned, you know, the United States also has a very substantial naval fleet down, I think, in the Gulf. We've got a carrier battle group, which is an aircraft carrier, but also usually accompanied by submarines and surface combatants. So we are, you know, certainly stronger, you know, in naval terms in the region than, you know, as you said, the, you know, the one Russian ship that kind of showing the flag and, you know, showing the Russian ire. So is it for show? Yeah, I think a lot of it is. You know, you can't take anything for granted. The one thing I would add is the Russians in recent years, with Soviet support, have installed a very considerable and potent air defense network in the region. We could probably destroy it if we needed to, but, you know, no one wants to get into those kind of scenarios simply because if you start destroying, you know, Russian equipment, you know, you probably start killing Russians, and, you know, that really takes you into a darker place that we probably don't want to go.
Now, one question I have for you, too, is let's say you're the National Security Advisor, and let's say, just for instance, I'm President of the United States, and in the same situation we're in now, and I told the battleships, aircraft carriers, what have you, if any planes do a flyby, a close flyby like the Russians were doing not so long ago, and I said shoot them out of the air, what would be the repercussions for that?
Well, I think, again, you're back to, you know, the national pride being brought into bear. First of all, Aaron, I think you'd be a great president. Always be an honor to serve with you. The fact of the matter is when you, first of all, you're right, the Russians have been doing this silly but also serious business of kind of the low flybys of U.S. ships in various parts of the world. You know, it's wholly unnecessary. You know, I think at the very least, if you thought that they were armed, you warn them away. You can fire warning shots. You know, you also have ways to communicate diplomatic to the Russians to give them warning to say, if you do this kind of seriousness at this point in time, after what we've done in Syria, you know, you have to accept the fact that, you know, your aircraft may be getting very sudden and very serious trouble. So I don't think you want to act like a gunslinger right away, but, you know, there is no reason, you know, that the United States has to accept, you know, any kind of intimidations, again, from naval and air forces on the Russian side that, frankly, are, you know, weaker and inferior to ours.
Well, one thing that just came to mind while you were saying this, and it's kind of backtracking a little bit. You know, you spent many years in the CIA and a lot of great people there. And what are the chances that we knew about this attack in advance? Maybe, you know, if Russia was involved in it, if there were drones flying over, do you think that the United States government knew that this was going to happen? And if so, what could we have done to prevent it?
Well, Aaron, that's an awfully good question that I haven't heard anyone in the media raise. Let me try to take a ballpark swing at an answer. You know, the first, I guess there are two parts to it. In one sense, we would have known, well, let me try three things. Number one, to my knowledge, there was not any indication in advance that we knew that such an attack was going to happen, flat out. I haven't heard anything about it. But let me just say in a generic sense, number two, one way we could have known is, you know, interception of communications or signals, you know, that would have been, if you will, a tip-off. Now, number three, the other way we could have known, and again, I am not saying that we knew this, but one way is what the intelligence professionals call INW, indicators and warning. And for example, you might be surveilling on a daily basis that airfield, you know, maybe from overhead satellites, and there may be indicators, for example, that that aircraft known to use these weapons were loading them up. So, I mean, again, that's a possible scenario. I'm not aware of it. So could we have known? Conceivably, yes. But, again, I have no sort of inside information or indications from, you know, our professionals still in the game that any of that happened. So, you know, Trump responded quickly, but I think his ability to do so, number one, was traced obviously to his willingness to take decisive action, that's self-evident. But number two, that the Pentagon clearly had, you know, a series of contingency plans that when the event occurred, you know, he could call the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, and say, look, here's, I know what happened. You know, what do you have sort of off the shelf for me that would give me options of how to respond?
Now, on a response like that, just so our listeners can understand, when a president decides to take action, what exactly takes place? Does he contact the Secretary of Defense and say, make it happen? Is there other ways he does it? How, say, like what happened with Syria, our missiles hitting the airfield.
Sure.
He wants that to happen. Who does he talk to make that, to do it?
Well, I think what usually happens, and probably happened in this case, Aaron, was, number one, the president, let me put it this way, a good president will try to gather as much information and assess its reliability before he does anything. He gets the information. Number two, he consults with senior staff. Now, how he does that and when and for how long, that's totally the president's discretion. Again, a good president will, you know, gather trusted advisors around him, like General McMaster, his national security advisor, like Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, and they will meet. And I think in this case, they met at least two or three times in, you know, fairly formal sessions to, you know, again, review the information, you know, weigh the options, and, you know, give the president a sense of, you know, here are the three, four, or five things that, Mr. President, you can choose to do. And then finally, Aaron, the president then has to give the formal order, I think, as you're asking, back to the Defense Department, you know, through the chain of command, the Secretary of Defense, you know, the word coming from the White House, where the president says, you know, I've chosen option B. We're going to attack. We're going to use cruise missiles. You know, Secretary Mattis, give the order to the operational military forces. Make it happen.
Wow. Okay. What? How long does that take? Once they say go, how soon can they make it happen?
Well,
from president,
you know, probably
to...
within a short number of, you know, hours. Once the Secretary of Defense receives the authorization to use force, then that is passed, obviously, to the appropriate military commanders. Then it's a question of just really operationally, you know, being prepared to go. And my strong hunch would be that certainly the two Navy ships that actually launched the cruise missiles in the Eastern Mediterranean, they probably had a very good sense of preparation, and we're told to stand by, that there was a, you know, likely order coming from Washington. So, I mean, the short answer is within a short number of hours, you can turn around a, you know, president's decision, a president's order to the Pentagon out to the military command, you know, and of course, to the ships themselves, and that can happen pretty quickly, and apparently it did in this case.
You know, 2 hours to me, like, if, let's say, a foreign country decided to attack us, that seems like a long amount of time. Is there a situation in which the military could go ahead and take action without the president's approval to defend the country?
Realistically, no. In cases of all-out war, you know, Aaron, you know, almost always you've got, you know, a lot of lead time. You have a crisis, you know, something like the Cuban Missile Crisis, and 62, or the Middle East wars in the 60s and 70s. So sort of this what the insiders call the bolt from the blue of sort of an attack with no warning is very, very unlikely. You know, it would literally take a madman to do that. Now, we have, you know, a great military. We've got great warning systems all around the globe, including, you know, in radars in North America, you know, that would tell us, you know, if an attack was underway. And I can tell you that, you know, in the case of a surprise attack, you know, the worst maybe of all possible scenarios, that, you know, again, assuming the military receives the orders from the president and the president has some notice, they can respond much faster than, you know, than 2 or 3 hours. Again, that's the worst case, because, again, most wars, you know, grow out of a crisis, and a crisis, you know, by definition, you know, takes days, weeks, months, you know, to unfold. But, you know, we do have, again, you know, the military globally, you know, looks out 24/7, you know, to give the president warning, you know, of a pending attack, and the president can, you know, he has the authority, and the military really cannot act without that authority, but the president always has, you know, the, if you will, the command and control literally with him 24/7, called the nuclear football, that, you know, again, in the worst possible scenario, you know, he can give the orders and respond, again, much faster than a, you know, a 2 or 3 hour window.
Fox News is also reporting today, and the headline says, Russian warship activity across Europe exceeds Cold War levels, a U.S. admiral says. That's the headline. Even though that they're, according to the article, their military, you know, has is, I guess the numbers are less than back during the Cold War. Could this be a catalyst with Syria into another Cold War, or is the media hyping it up as – I mean, what's going on? People seem like that, you know, that we're headed toward that direction, another Cold War. What do you forecast?
Well, you know, a great question. You know, the context is all important here. You know, we would need to see, if I were advising Mr. Trump, you need to see how many, where, and when are, you know, the Russians operating. We're obviously monitoring their behavior, again, 24/7. There shouldn't really be any great surprises, certainly in terms of tracking the Russian Navy. Now, again, we are much stronger than they are in naval terms. They know it. We know it. We know they know it. So I would not think there would be, you know, any kind of immediate crisis. Now, having said that, Aaron, I know you like history, and, you know, in the past, both distant past and not so long ago, you know, we have been shown by history that, you know, wars can start, or crises can start inadvertently when no one wants them. World War I is a great example. So, you know, I am cautiously optimistic. None of this has to become a crisis, and I think it will only become a crisis if, number one, as you said, Putin miscalculates, or number two, the Russians choose to really build up and try to, if you will, and I don't mean this in a flip way, they kind of try to thump their chests and intimidate Trump. What we're seeing in Donald Trump possibly is, if you will, a graduate course in international politics. You know, he campaigned, Aaron, you know, on the America First platform, much more isolationist in his rhetoric than, for example, George Bush. But, you know, Trump has shown that, you know, he now is beginning to realize that America, as he said, has interests in the world, certainly interest in the Middle East. We have interest in, you know, making sure that innocent women and children and men are not gassed by poison chemicals. So it'll be really interesting to see how far he's willing to take these lessons and where his advisors tell him to go. And I think as you and I are trying to wade through these issues tonight, I think the same thing is being done in Moscow. It's being done in China, Beijing. It's being done in North Korea. It's being done in Iran. I think everyone around the globe is trying to come to their own answers to your questions. You know, what is Trump really about? what's he willing to do? And what I would say is the next week or so will tell us an awful lot in many ways, not only where, you know, Trump's thinking is, but also, you know, where our adversaries are. So, you know, the next week becomes really critical. And look, this is a big chess game that's being played, Aaron, on an international chessboard. And, you know, I am hoping that, you know, the people around the president are urging a lot of caution, be thoughtful, gather as much information as you can, but just, you know, stay the course and, you know, let's see if, you know, a quiet strength can prevail.
You know, we spoke earlier that Russia, you know, we think knew about this, you know, was
yes.
complicit in what happened. Now, with that being said, I don't even know how to phrase this question. With that being said, if they knew about it, why would we, and let me back up for just a moment. The night of the Syrian attack, I heard CNN and Fox News, they were both reporting that maybe we didn't let Putin know, but militarily to military, we let Russia know that we were going to
right.
Do what we did. Now, fast forward to today with Russia apparently knowing about this chemical strike, why would we have let Russia know or give them a courtesy that we're going to launch a missile strike against this airbase and give them the opportunity to move their assets out if they were complicit in this also? Was that a miscalculation on our part?
Well, you know, it's not clear to me, Aaron, and we need to, you know, pin this down a little better, all of us, what the timing is of what we knew and, again, how we knew it. When we gave the Russians the warning, we may not have been fully convinced that they knew in advance. So the timing question, I think, is important. The second part is my guess would be, you know, and again, I served in the White House, and I wrote last year a book called The Age of Hatred, and I've got a chapter on Syria, and I talk about the Russian involvement in the Age of Hatred. And, you know, I think what you try to do, Aaron, and this may not make sense to the audience, is you don't want to inadvertently, you know, be in a position where you start killing Russians because you push them into a corner that you probably don't want them in and they don't want to be in because they might feel compelled to strike back at us. So mm-hmm. It was an attack against Syria, an attack against the Syrian Air Force, and I think he did it wisely, and I would have agreed in the book. I think the president, our president, was correct to give the warning to say, look, this is coming. It's not directed at Russia, at least at this point in time. The Syrians carried out the attack. We're really unhappy about it. We won't accept it, and here's the action we're going to take. So we had at least in this initial go-round, and again, there may be subsequent actions where this does or doesn't happen, but in the first go-round, we sort of gave the Russians the courtesy of a heads-up and say, look, these missiles are coming. They're very accurate. They're very lethal, and, you know, if you don't want your manpower or your equipment destroyed, you might want to, you know, get out of harm's way.
Would that have in turn let the Syrians know that something's up? I mean, all of a sudden, all these, you know, the Russians are leaving, packing up, leaving this airbase. Would the Syrians have suspected an imminent attack?
Well, you know, that's again a question of timing. I think what do we mean by imminent? Remember, the cruise missiles were launched from the Eastern Med. They're pretty fast flying. There was probably no or little detection time, either from the Russians or the Syrians. You know, they're very low flying, but they were on the way. And my strong hunch would be, Aaron, that in practical terms, the Syrians had very little warning. I think the Russians, when they heard, probably would have tried to convey that to the Syrians. But again, I suspect there was not much warning time for either of them to be had. Again, just because of the way the cruise missiles operate.
And one last question, and we'll leave it at that until next time. And gosh, I hope things aren't worse next time. But Susan Rice of the former Obama administration, she had said that there were no chemical weapons in Syria. And was she being disingenuous, or, you know, did Syria move those out? Did they bring them back? Did they remanufacture some? Did they hide them? When she made that statement, was that an accurate statement?
No, Aaron, it was not an accurate statement. And look, I did arms control issues for many years, both at CIA and in the White House. Any kind of agreement like that one, where Kerry and Rice said, you know, we got them all, anyone that really believed that, I would say, has no idea what the realities on the ground are. It is very complex. It is hard to know, first of all, for sure, that you've got an accurate baseline of what you're trying to remove. For example, if you think, you know, the number is 20, but it's actually 30, and you think you got 20, well, maybe you think, well, I got them all. But the reality is the intelligence community would have known, they would have told the White House, that you cannot have 100% certainty about what the adversary had at the time. Now, that being said, you know, you again, prudence would demand, even if you think you got a lot out, you've got to assume that the adversary is probably going to cheat, try to hide some, as you were saying. They may have produced additional ones. So, you know, the assurances that Susan Rice and John Kerry gave to the American public, at the very least, were disingenuous, and they may have known and probably did know that those statements were just flat out not true. So I'm not at all surprised, you know, that Syria maintained at least a residual capability to carry out the kind of horrific attacks, you know, we saw last week.
Well, last thought on this, and you know this and I know this, you know, this point goes to prove with the statements from Susan Rice and John Kerry that, you know, decisions made now can affect years in the future, and this certainly is the case also. But Jack Caravelli, thank you for coming on the show. You are welcome back anytime, and hopefully, you know, hopefully things don't get worse. At least we'll be better somewhat next time we talk.
Aaron, thank you for that. It would be great to have a conversation when we're not in crisis. And, you know, for people that want to delve deeper into this, you know, I would commend to them the book I wrote last year on Amazon called The Age of Hatred. And there's a lot on Syria. There's a lot on the issue you just raised, actually, of Kerry and Rice. And I think, again, people that want to delve into that, you know, I hope they will find it a good read.
Well, Dr. Jack Caravelli, thank you so much for your advice and your insight, and we'll talk to you next time.
Aaron, thank you. All the best.
You too. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Dr. Jack Caravelli, a wealth of knowledge. And as you said, pick up his book, Age of Hatred. You can get that on Amazon, and as quick as Amazon is, you can have it, you know, in the next day or two. So fascinating read. I've read it myself. So Age of Hatred by Dr. Jack Caravelli. Pick it up at Amazon.com. My special thanks to him. Again, my condolences to the families in San Bernardino that are going through that horrific, horrific situation today with the shooter. And then also thoughts and prayers go out to our military and also our president. Again, thanks for tuning in with us. Until next time, and we will see you then.
Aaron McCready.